Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Hannah Colton. Early childhood is a crucial time for learning and development. It's on the minds of many lawmakers this session, and Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has declared universal pre-K one of her top priorities. But where will funding for these programs come from? And how can the state better coordinate the various services to ensure kids don't miss out? We want to hear from you this hour, especially parents of young children, or if you work in childcare or early ed. You can email us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in live at 277-5866. That's in the 505 area code. In a bit, we will hear from lawmakers who are working on these issues. But first, I want to welcome in the studio this morning, Haley Hines, a policy researcher at UNM's Cradle to Career Policy Institute. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also here is Carmela Salinas, a pre-K teacher and member of Olé, New Mexico.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. So, Carmela, you work in a private CYFD-run pre-K center in Española, right?
Yes.
Can you tell us about that, and why is it important to the families that you work with?
So I've been working at the Family Learning Center in Española. This is my 17th year. I've been doing New Mexico pre-K since its inception, and I think it was 2005, 2006. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important. I think it's important to work with the community, especially a community like Española. I think the profession of early childhood is a meaningful job, and the rewards, although they're not monetary, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like I impact the community.
Well, so tell us about that. That's a really important point. Is that we know from research that high-quality pre-K can make a big impact on kids' lives, right? But the in a lot of private centers especially, you're saying that the wages are really low.
Yeah, so in comparison to – and I teach New Mexico pre-K, which is actually – half of it is split through CYFD and half of it is split through PED. Mm. And the work we do is exactly the same, yet the – teachers who teach in the public education department, sometimes their salary is double what a CYFD pre-K teacher is. The average income of just a child care worker or a preschool teacher is roughly $9 an hour. And in my center, it's much higher, but it's still I still don't make $15 an hour. It's poverty wages. We work for poverty wages.
And that difference between the PED pre-K wage and other centers can be like whether you have a bachelor's degree or not. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. New Mexico pre-K has pushed that every single teacher teaching New Mexico pre-K is either going towards a bachelor's degree or has one already. The problem with that is in the CYFD centers, once a teacher obtains their bachelor's degree, they don't stay in the private sector. They move on to PED because, you know, they get higher wages, they get benefits, they get retirement.
So there's this balance of wanting to have a lot of options. That's we'll talk about the mixed delivery system, but then there's like different incentives in the private run or the PED run centers.
Right. I think the thing with working for a private center is it's more personal. I feel, you know, the interaction with families and with children, to me, I feel like it's a lot more more like a family.
What do you like? What specific elements of the Family Learning Center do you feel like serve your families well?
We provide not only New Mexico pre-K, but we provide an aftercare program, which is 5 days. We operate 5 days a week from 7:30 to 5:30. That is a huge. That's something that our community needs because so many parents work. Everybody works a lot. We have a lot of single moms that, you know, work two jobs or work all day and or work in at the Los Alamos laboratory and they need that kind of service. I mean, we provide just so many different like culturally relevant activities for the kids. We try to do a field trip every single month. So, yeah, I love working there.
Is it difficult for families in Española to find a good program, do you think?
Absolutely. I think it's difficult for families anywhere to find a good program. Family Learning Center is a 5-star nationally accredited program. And it's, I think it might just be one of two in Española, but access to childcare is definitely, I know we have from the minute we open enrollment, it fills on that day. And we only have 2 classrooms, a 4-year-old classroom and a 3-year-old classroom with 36, I think it's 36 slots. So once that's full.
We're speaking with Carmela Salinas, who works in pre-K at a center in Española. We want to hear from you on the program today. Do you have little kids? What helps them learn and grow? What services do you need the most? Call in this morning, 277-5866. You can also tweet your comment at us with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We do have an email comment from Liz, who says, often kids in New Mexico are expected to learn to read in kindergarten, but the kids need to understand language first, and that takes time and resources that not all families have enough of. I want to bring into the conversation Haley Hines from UNM, a policy researcher. What's your response to that? I mean, we hear a lot about high quality pre-K programs, but what does that mean?
Sure. Thanks, Hannah. I think in terms of quality, we actually, as a research community, nationally and locally, have learned a lot over the years about what that looks like. And what drives high quality in early childhood programs more than anything is the quality of the instructors. So I'm so glad you have Carmela in studio to sort of talk about it from a classroom perspective. Because really what the research shows, for example, is that there are a bunch of early childhood curricula, and that which curriculum you use is not a very powerful predictor of quality. But the sort of high-quality interactions that the instructor has with the children, sort of whatever curriculum they're using, is what really counts. And so having people in there who are well-trained, who are experienced, who have lots of supports if they're early in their career, and who are getting all the supports they need, I mean, that's how you get to quality. I mean, there are also sort of a set of quality standards about learning goals, and all of that is really important. But I think it all somewhat pales in comparison to the importance of having like an excellent set of adults in the room. And so that's where I get really passionate about workforce issues. And I really appreciate that Carmela sort of went right to it. It's like, let's talk about compensation for this workforce. Let's talk about how we get great people in these jobs, and how do we make them better jobs? I while I was listening to you talk about the BA question, that like is sort of public school pre-K compensated so much better because those teachers have BAs, bachelor's degrees. It's actually a lot more complicated than that, because even with a bachelor's degree in a private program, there's no guarantee that you're paid anything close. I mean, I'm aware of pre-K teachers in private childcare centers who have bachelor's degrees and are still not compensated at anything close to sort of the way that New Mexico compensates its pre-K teachers who work in public schools. And part of it is that we don't have good data about this. It's a large network of small private businesses and nonprofits, and there's not good centralized data about how that part of the workforce is compensated. I mean, Carmela was really sort of forthcoming about how compensation works in her center. I would say that is probably not representative. That is one center, and there are probably people making a lot less depending on their business structure. And so a bachelor's degree does not guarantee that you have any sort of path to higher wages in this field. There's a study nationally that found that a bachelor's degree in early childhood is the bachelor's degree with the lowest earning potential of all bachelor's degrees. So, like, there's a whole thing that has to happen once we get people to that level to make it worth it for them and to make these good jobs that people want.
I want to zoom out for a minute, and we'll put those questions about workforce to our lawmakers and decision makers later. But pre-K funding is not included in the public school funding formula, right? So instead, it's had its own pot of money over the years in state government. Haley, can you talk about what's the state of NM pre-K funding over the past several years?
Sure. I think there are many people who, probably everybody who in this room who values early childhood, would say that we want to put more money into early childhood because it's extremely important. I do think it's worth noting, though, that the pre-K appropriation has not fared badly over the course of the last 8 years. That if you look at how pre-K has been funded, as you said, with its own pot of money, not in the funding formula, it has increased. If you look at it over the span of the life of the program since 2005, it's increased tenfold. It's increased up quite a bit. So I do think there's an interesting, fairly bipartisan consensus in New Mexico that early childhood is important, and having it on its own appropriation line, I think a lot of people feel like the increase has been incremental and it hasn't been enough, but it has increased and it hasn't been cut actually in the same way that K-12 education has been cut. And so in that way, we've been able to grow the program and see it expand and grow stronger and see a lot of the quality supports really strengthened. So even during the recession, pre-K has been a little bit of a budgetary success story. The LFC has put it in there, the Legislative Finance Committee, which does a lot of the budget work, has put it in their budget every year. And with a little more money in it every year. So good things have been happening.
That's good context to have. And until this week, in the legislative session, there were these two competing proposals for how to restructure early childhood services. And I want to spend some time on those today. But before we get into those, Haley, will you give us a sense, like, why all the interest in restructuring early childhood?
Absolutely. So a lot of the conversations that happen in the sort of early childhood policy people community have been around how can we coordinate these services better? So this was alluded to earlier, but New Mexico Pre-K is administered by both the Public Education Department and the Children, Youth, and Families Department. The Children, Youth, and Families Department works with private child care centers, which can be either private businesses or nonprofits. And if they want to stand up a pre-K classroom in their child care center, they work with CYFD. And CYFD helps ensure that they're meeting the standards for pre-K and, you know, gives them funding to provide those pre-K services. On the public education side, similarly, usually an elementary school or a school district wants to put a pre-K classroom in there as part of their system, they work with the public education department. Across the two systems, they have the same set of standards and learning guidelines. So there's really very good parity across the programs. As Carmela mentioned, there is very poor parity in pay across the programs because pre-K teachers on the public education side are in the three-tier licensure system. So they are paid what all our public school teachers are paid according to three-tier. Whereas on the other side, they are paid according to whatever the pay structure is in their child care center. But that's that's pre-K. And then in addition to pre-K, there's Head Start, which also serves 3 and 4 year olds in our community. It's a federally funded program that serves low-income young children. And we have other programs too, such as home visiting for families of infants and new babies. We have the FIT program, which serves families with developmental delays and disabilities, and so children. And so all those programs together, I think are spread across several departments. We've got public education. Mm-hmm. We've got children, youth, and families. The FIT program I just mentioned is housed in the Department of Health. And so as we have developed our understanding of the importance of early childhood, I think the early childhood community has come to the realization that these services can feel really fragmented. A sort of very concrete but I think important example is there was some work a few years ago that found that CYFD and PED released their request for proposals for pre-K at different times of the year. And the reason that matters would be that pre-K would say, CYFD might say, who wants to start a pre-K program? And a child care center might look around and say, okay, we have some unserved 4-year-olds. we will apply for that. We want to serve 24-year-olds. And then a month later or so, they might realize that the elementary school down the street is actually also opening a classroom. And so now they're competing for 4-year-olds.
I see. So
that seems like a really solvable problem, but it's an example of where we are.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico. We're going to go to a quick break. The number to call in this morning, we're talking about early childhood education and services, is 277-5866. You can also tweet with the hashtag Let's Talk NM. This is KUNM 89.9. We'll be back in a minute.
UNM Children's Hospital cares for New Mexico's smallest and most vulnerable. Proud to bring health care to children for over 50 years and proud to support KUNM Public Radio.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
This Saturday on the Children's Hour, what does a governor do? The Children's Hour Kids crew members talk with New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham to find out her plan to improve the lives of children across our state, learn what's going to happen with park tests, and how will she address climate change? Plus, they flitter and flutter, but how much do you really know about butterflies? It's all in an hour. The Children's Hour, Saturdays from 9 to 10 a.m.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today is early childhood education and services in New Mexico. What do you want lawmakers to understand about your family's experience with early childhood programs? Do you think the state should dedicate more funding to early childhood? Where should that money go? And where should the money come from? Call in this morning for about 40 more minutes here, 277-5866. We're also on Twitter. You can use the hashtag Let's Talk NM. I want to introduce in the studio this morning Diane Denish, former Lieutenant Governor of New Mexico. And you've been lobbying this session for a bill to create a new department, right?
I have.
Thanks for being here.
I've been lobbying for it a long time before this, but this session is really the opportunity where there's a plan that's been put together.
Well, so tell us about it. It would create the Early Childhood Education and Care Department. Is that right?
Exactly. And Carmela and Haley have talked about a lot of points that are really important in this bill. One is the coordination of services that are now scattered across about 4 departments. And so it creates efficiencies. It creates a focus. From my point of view, we've had, since I was lieutenant governor and we started pre-K, and I was the leader on the 4-year-old pre-K program that many of these people have been talking about, we've been talking about the first 5 years for a very long time. So this is about more than just 4-year-old pre-K or 3-year-old pre-K. It's about the first 5 years. And it brings together scattered resources for better efficiencies. It creates that focus that everybody talks about when they campaign all year long and they talk about, we got to put more money, then there's been conversations about funding for early childhood over about the last 10-year period about a dedicated revenue source. And as a matter of fact, one of the arguments has always been, you know, well, what are we going to do with this money? It's not coordinated. There's no plan. Senate Bill 22, Senator Michael Padilla and the now Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales years ago presented this bill the first time. And they did some work on it last year, but decided not to take it through the legislative session. And this year, it's come back. We've been working with the Lieutenant Governor. We've been working with the governor's office to make sure that this had the elements to monitor quality and fidelity. I really appreciate the point about data. One of the things about having a department that focuses is finally there'll be a concentration on gathering data about pay scales, about outcomes, about the kinds of things that people want to know about whether taxpayer dollars are being spent efficiently. And the second thing, I wanted to just play on Carmela's point about full day, full year care through the private system is incredibly important to working families throughout New Mexico. And that's what the mixed delivery system offers. It offers the public model. It also offers the private model. So families have choices about what kind of, where their children can be, continuum of care from the time they first go into child care all the way until they hit kindergarten, five-year-old kindergarten.
And so, as you mentioned, this bill is sponsored by Senator Michael Padilla. And I mentioned before there was a competing proposal this session that was from Senator Bill Soles, which would have proposed to roll pre-K into the public school funding formula. But as of a couple days ago, Senator Soles has said he's tabling his proposal and backing yours. Can you talk about what happened or what are the politics around this right now? I mean, are we likely to see a new department created?
Well, I think it's a very good possibility. The first hearing is Monday in the Rules Committee, so we'll and it has a long way to go. But let me just say they weren't really competing bills in the sense that SB 22 is about governance and about 0 to 5. Senator Soles' bill was about getting all four-year-old pre-Ks, everybody put into the public system, and about getting the funding formula to include four-year-old pre-K. So that was Senator Soles' bill, and I think he came to understand that. The bills, we were perfectly happy for the two bills to walk in their own lanes and go all the way through, but I think that what Senator Soles heard from private providers around New Mexico, as well as, I just want to mention the Yazzie lawsuit, which talked about the need for improving early childhood education and care. It wasn't just about pre-K. A little bit of it is. But there was also a point in that lawsuit that said some things above the line that are already above the line in the guarantee weren't really working or being held accountable. So there is no guarantee if you put things in this funding formula, the SEG as we call it, there's no guarantee that, one, it won't be cut when there's cuts to education. And as Haley pointed out, one of the great things has been in early childhood is the recognition of the value of investing in the first 5 years has come to play. Legislators have been more and more willing to continue to fund and increase funding for that over the last 10, 12 years. So it's been there is no guarantee if there's a formula that four-year-old pre-K would not suffer with education cuts.
You mentioned the Yazzie Martinez education ruling, which a judge found that the state of New Mexico has been underserving and violating the constitutional rights of Native American children, low-income children, those with disabilities, and English language learners. And this was a point that I wanted to bring up. That many, you know, many working families and many providers of childcare and pre-K, right, are people of color, women of color providing these services. Carmela, can you talk about that a little bit? What do you think lawmakers don't necessarily understand or don't understand well enough about the experience of working families, or even like why is it important that kids have teachers with similar backgrounds as them? That's a big question, I know.
I know.
Rolled a couple things into one.
A big question, but I do think that children can relate, like I said earlier, about having culturally relevant activities, being able to speak the same language as your child, being able to speak with parents, being able to relate to them. I think that children really need a role model that looks like them. And I think that I'm not sure what lawmakers are doing about this, but I do know that setting these higher standards on teachers makes it harder for women of color to, a lot of these women who work in the private sector, it makes it harder for them to obtain a bachelor's degree, you know, as far as, you know, being able to afford the tuition or, you know, the books that go with taking, and there's no way that they're going to get it done in 4 years, right? And even with scholarships that have been made available, like the Teach Scholarship or this new one, the CYFD Scholarship, it's still, you know, the reality of women of color who are already working full time with poverty wages as a child care educator, I think with families, they have families, they have, you know, some might have a second job. It's I think it's almost impossible to go to school, afford school, obtain a bachelor's degree. Many of these women have been working in the private sector for, like myself, 17 years. Some, even if it's 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you know, 20 years. I do think that we're almost being pushed. I feel like we're being pushed out. And this is why I think the workforce is so I know that there's a workforce bill that's, I think, going to be coming out. But I think it's so important to support these women because it's important to keep them in their classrooms with children who they can relate to and who can relate to them.
I just want to jump in there because I think one of the things that Senate Bill 22, it has a requirement. There was a vetting of a business plan for early childhood around the state. About 1,000 people participated in feedback about what are the things in quality and fidelity. But workforce development, professional development is actually a part of this bill that when you get money for early childhood, you try to disperse it in ways that that supports teachers and supports their increased academic certification or associate's degrees or whatever it is. It's going to be really important over the next few years for the higher ed community and the community college community to continue their work in those fields, which has been happening to increase professional development. And that's the way we get the salaries up, is to make sure that we support teachers in their efforts to increase their certifications and degree status, and then watch the standards, monitor outcomes, gather the data, do all the things together to make sure that taxpayers are getting their money's worth. But at the bottom line is that it helps children and their families to have these opportunities at the end of the day.
Let's take a listener call. Ashley is on the line from Santa Fe. Ashley, what would you like to add to the program?
Hi. I would just like to make a comment about, I've worked in both CYFD and public schools and for New Mexico Pre-K. I'm speaking to you today as a stay-at-home mother. And one of my concerns is with the standardization, the homogenization of pre-K under public schools, that right now there's a huge disconnect between, while we don't have these great definitions for what high quality looks like, I don't believe yet. We do have really great definitions for what developmentally appropriate practice looks like. And I think there is a disconnect between kindergarten and pre-K currently as it stands. And I think pre-K is just doing really great work to honor the whole child and to build really strong foundations. And my fear is how that bridge is going to be that gap is going to be bridged between kindergarten and early childhood programs, and how are we going to keep that same really strong understanding of what developmentally appropriate practice is and how kids learn at this age?
Thanks so much for that comment, Ashley. Haley, do you want to respond?
Yes, I think it's a smart comment, and it made me think of I had the opportunity to tour some pre-K sites in Boston a number of years ago, which has a really very successful pre-K program, good research coming out of their program. But one of their philosophies that I think is really interesting that goes to this call is that they had great success in their 3-year-old and 4-year-old settings, and they sort of found that this was true, that they had done this great work about play-based whole child stuff, and then as soon as kids turned 5, they were in a much more K-12, getting ready for standardized testing setting. And so they've got their phrases push up, that instead of the K-12 system pushing down into pre-K, that the pre-K system push up into K-12 and say play-based whole child practices that we have cultivated in our pre-K setting, we need to see them, because kindergartners are also very young children, and that we need to push some of these practices up. And so I think these ideas are out there in the world. I don't think in New Mexico we've talked really about what if we pull some of that up into kindergarten, because they have been pretty fragmented systems. But certainly people in the country are talking about this idea.
Thanks for that. I want to welcome on the line now, we have Representative Javier Martinez, a Democratic House lawmaker from Albuquerque, who has sponsored a resolution that would ask voters for approval to use an additional 1% from the land grant permanent fund to pay for early childhood education. Good morning, Representative.
Hi, good morning, Hannah, and good morning to all of your guests.
Thanks for being on the program. So this bill we've been hearing a lot about a pinch from the land grant permanent fund, comes up year after year, often, or always, I should say, gets blocked by fiscal conservatives in the Senate. Why do you think this would be a responsible move?
Well, the governor has called for a moonshot on education. It is time that we transform the entire system for New Mexico's kids from birth all the way through higher education. The fact of the matter is that New Mexico has one of the highest rates of adverse childhood experiences in the country. We have one of the worst, if not the worst, in terms of child well-being outcomes. We've got to do something different. I agree with you guys. You know, we have been increasing funding, but it's been very incremental funding. And keep in mind, a lot of the funding that's being counted towards things like pre-K and early ed is actually funding for programs like K-3+, which are very good programs, but in nature, they are remedial programs for children that are no longer necessarily between the ages of 0 and 5. Furthermore, you know, all this talk about pre-K, it's great, and we should be investing more in pre-K, but really, the biggest bang for our buck is by investing in those first 3 years. That's where 80% of brain development happens, and that's also where we are investing the least. So, why this is a responsible move? It's irresponsible not to do it. It's irresponsible to leave so many children behind, given the sad state of affairs in New Mexico. I agree with the governor. This is a responsible pinch. It is 1% additional distribution from the land grant fund, which is currently valued at close to $18 billion. The funding would go to support home visiting programs, child care, pre-K, as well as workforce development. And for me, that's one of the most important pieces of this, because as your guests have stated earlier, our early educators are being paid poverty wages. It is unfair, it is immoral to have our early educators have to go apply for public benefits because they cannot make ends meet for their own families. Our proposal is a reliable $150 million a year funding source. It is not tied to the volatility of state budget. And it could be done in perpetuity. That's what's really exciting about it. It's passed the House of Representatives now on 3 occasions, and we expect to pass it again. And we have full expectation that this will pass the Senate this year and go to the voters for their decision.
So we had Senator John Arthur Smith on this program a couple weeks ago, head of Senate Finance. He's sort of the gatekeeper for these things. And he indicated he's still not budging on this issue. So what makes you think that things will be different, Representative Martinez?
Well, you know, New Mexico is in a sad, sad place. You know, we walk around the Capitol building and congratulate each other all the time as legislators and with, you know, the advocates and the lobbyists. The fact of the matter is you walk out of that building and you walk 2 miles south to the south side of Santa Fe and you see tremendous need. You see children with parents who are struggling day in and day out. The question really should be posed to the senator. Why not? Mm. Why not? And if he says, you know, it's fiscally responsible, ask him to prove that it's fiscally responsible, because according to the State Investment Council's own numbers and the LFC's own numbers, this actually is not fiscally irresponsible. In fact, it's irresponsible not to do it because of the tremendous cost savings we will experience in the next 10 to 15 years in the form of not having to pay for remedial programs for children in public schools and in the way of not having to pay for things like drug treatment and incarceration. That's the fiscally irresponsible thing to do. I can tell you, I'm a member of the House Appropriations and Finance Committee and Vice Chair of the Tax Committee, and these budget surpluses that we have right now are very volatile and very unreliable. They may not be here a year from now.
All right, Representative, thank you so much for coming on the program. I want to take a listener call from Albuquerque. Eric, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. So I just wanted to thank Lieutenant Governor Dennis for her leadership on this for many, many years. She's been benches, and we wouldn't be having this conversation if not for all her work. So thank you. And Representative Martinez for stepping up so strongly the last few years on this. My question is really just for listeners to get some perspective on how much money, because there's a lot of dollars, figures being thrown around. And if we think about what we spend for K-12, which hopefully will be closer to half of our budget, you know, and, you know, Haley may be able to get us the per pupil spending per K-12 student compared to the, you know, 130 to 140,000 kids, 0 to 5, what we spend if we just took that the number of kids and how much we're currently spending on early childhood. And if you compare those two numbers, you really find that we're really, really underinvesting. And I guess to Representative Martinez's point, I'd love to ask your guests, how is it that if there's so much public will and political will and it makes financial sense and all the arguments we're hearing, will the Democratic leadership in the Senate really say to Senator Smith, you know, you got to let this be voted on. I mean, people want to vote on it, and the voters should be allowed to take a vote on it. So what it's kind of one is part one is funding. Part two is what's the political will among Democrats to really basically call on Senator Smith to let this out of his committee and have a floor vote?
Eric, thank you so much for those questions. I'll put them to our guests after this quick break. The number to call in this morning, 277-5866, or you can email us, letstalk@kunm.org. This is KUNM 89.9. We'll be back in a minute.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, it's almost Valentine's Day and we couldn't help ourselves. We're bringing you a love story of student activism from 1968, when thousands of students walked out of their high school and helped spark the Chicano movement. Love in the East LA walkouts. That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
It's the season of love. If you love KUNM and couldn't imagine life in New Mexico without it, now is a good time to support what you love by donating that unwanted car or truck. Maybe you're no longer driving it, or maybe you just need more room in your driveway. Either way, donating it to KUNM is a great way to show your love. To find out if your vehicle qualifies, call 888-KUNM. Car. That's 888-586-6227.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM 89.9 FM. I'm Hannah Colton. We're talking this morning about early childhood education and care. Do you work in early childhood services? What insights do you have on how to fix the system? Or do you have young kids at home? What kinds of services do they need the most? Give us a call, 277-5866. I want to welcome on the phone line this morning, Representative Rebecca Dow, a House Republican from Truth or Consequences. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. And hi to everybody out there listening.
Thanks for being on. And so you founded a faith-based child care center in Sierra County. So you have a lot of experience with this. What's your biggest priority this session as far as early childhood services?
Well, absolutely increasing access to families to high-quality early childhood interventions that happen prenatal until their child enters kindergarten. Particularly, I'm focusing on increasing access to services for kinship, guardianship, and improving the foster care system, as well as advocating and supporting any other early childhood initiatives.
And so where do you think the money for pre-K could come from? That's really the hot topic this session.
Yeah. And so everyone is focused on pre-K and where the money for pre-K access to more classrooms and more school day silo operations have come from. And I really think we need to slow down, take a look at the workforce, because there's two indicators of student success. Parents are the number one indicator of student success, and a qualified workforce is the second indicator. So I feel like we really, really need to focus on the workforce and the qualified workforce to provide the services. If we just continue to fund just slots for pre-K, we're going to continue to see a decline on the rate of return. In the beginning, when we were very intentional about targeting the children who need it most and targeting the services with the most qualified staff, we were seeing a much higher rate of return, estimated as much as 11 to 17. Now, it's just universal. We have unqualified staff, people without even any experience or any teaching degree whatsoever. We're seeing now a rate of return as low as 3%. So workforce would be my focus versus more slots. But we've got to reinvest in the workforce and also strengthening families.
Would you support that measure we were talking about to pull an additional 1% from the land-grant permanent fund?
You know, that is such an interesting question because we talk all the time, like what we've heard this session is because of the Yazzie lawsuit and the ruling that came from the judge, that we need over $1 billion additional dollars for our existing infrastructure, for those beneficiaries who are already listed, our K-12 system and our special schools. And yet we're looking at putting, you know, $500,000 this year from our general operating budget. The issue I have with the 1% going to expand the definition to include prenatal to 5 is that we have an AG ruling that has not been, no one has, it's been said that that's not true, but there's no other ruling that has come out saying that the land grant funds cannot be utilized by the existing early childhood system. And the vast majority of what happens for families prenatal to 5 is happening outside of the school day. It's with 0 to 3-year-olds, and it's through CYFD, not PED. So if I'm not entirely opposed to growing that percentage to 1%, but I would want to see it fully utilize the Yazzie lawsuit and our early childhood investments can continue to come from the general operating and to fully utilize the federal dollars that we just leave on the table. We are reverting federal dollars that cost the state nothing for Head Start. We're not fully utilizing our Head Start child care dollars or even our military child care dollars. There's a lot more federal dollars left on the table. And if we use the permanent land grant fund to fully utilize what its intention was, the K-12 system and the existing special schools, we would free up general dollars for our mixed delivery early childhood system that is already in existence.
What are some ways that the state could better coordinate with those federal programs? I mean, Head Start programs send back hundreds of thousands of dollars to the federal government because of this competition. I mean, what would you propose to get at that?
And I think the bigger thing that's happening with the coordination is that as we keep expanding public pre-K classrooms, we're actually supplanting the children and the qualified teachers from those Head Start programs. And then you hear these reports, well, oh, public pre-K is doing really well. Well, we supplanted the qualified workforce because that is a requirement at a public pre-K site. So they left the Head Start program, which was 100% federally funded. They left the most vulnerable children. You must be under 100% of poverty. And those children are now in a classroom with a brand new teacher without the experience and the richness that was actually used to demonstrate the need to expand pre-K. So the coordination really needs to happen, and we need to be intentional about not supplanting. And that's actually already in the New Mexico pre-K statute. There was a strong commitment from Speaker Miera, as well as the other sponsors on that, that we would not do harm to our existing programs. And those are our Star 4 and Star 5 child care centers that are nationally accredited and are federally funded Head Start programs. And so the coordination needs to happen. I've been doing this for over 20 years in New Mexico. The most effective leadership that I saw was the Children's Cabinet under Diane Dinesh. And when Diane Dinesh was the leadership and she had the backing of Richardson, the coordination between the members of the council of the Children's Cabinet, which included the cabinet secretaries from DOH, CYFD, PED, Behavioral Health Services, all those impacting families with young children, it was meaningful and it was intentional. And I do think that Children's Cabinet could play that role again. There's also, you know, Senate Bill 22, which would create a brand new agency. And really leadership, it's been my experience that leadership makes an agency effective and leadership makes a council or the Early Learning Advisory Council or the Children's Cabinet. Those are effective when the leadership is behind it.
Sounds like we found a point of bipartisan agreement here on that coordination.
Well, let me just say that it was Representative Dow, when we did the 4-year-old pre-K, she's very much responsible for fighting hard for the mixed delivery system and this small economic engine of women around the state, women and men, actually, who run child care and pre-K centers.
All right. And that's Diane Dinesh here in our studio, former lieutenant governor. And Rebecca Dow, thank you so much for coming on the program this morning, representative from Truth or Consequences. I want to take a few listener calls. We've got a few on the line. Barbara is in Albuquerque. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. I want to thank you for hosting this call and for the attention given to our earliest gift, which is our children. And in that sense, I think that everyone think about this as an investment in our future because our children are our future. My concern in listening was I think educators don't want another discontinuity another bureaucracy that will then create more walls between articulation of curriculum and child development between early childhood and the public education system. But one issue that I didn't see addressed, and perhaps I may have missed it, so not a criticism, but just a concern that I want to put in there, is about the professionalization and the professional development learning that will be needed between to articulate between early childhood and the public and the K-1 system. We often underestimate, and we'd have to transform our current system in order to provide the kind of professional learning to early childhood providers that's needed to step in this new horizon of understanding the value of early childhood education and early childhood educators. I don't think we have a current system that can support teachers, especially of young children, in this transition. And so we can't push them into the current system in the way we train and develop teachers, because I think it's broken. And it would sort of take us off the tracks unless we are attentive to that need as well.
Thank you for that comment, Barbara. We did have an email comment from Dwayne, who says no education worker should be paid a poverty wage, but that he also doesn't want his tax dollars going to private or parochial early education centers. And he hopes that an early childhood department would gather data and address the wrongs in the system. Let's go now to Joan in Bosque Farms. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Joan. I am the executive director of a nonprofit before, and I represent a lot of the owners of private programs, directors of the private nonprofit programs that offer the 0-5 services. And I have to say, I'm very excited that we are now discussing these professionals as early childhood professionals and educators. 9 years ago, we were still fighting that they weren't babysitters, that they were indeed educators. And I think that this new department that is in discussion is finally saying, you know, these are educators, they deserve professional wages. You know, currently the private providers are reimbursed at a rate lower than what it costs to do the job. And we wouldn't, as a state, reimburse any other state contractor at lower than what it costs to do the job. There are so many of these owners and directors of the private programs who have gone years without paying themselves to ensure that their teachers get as much as they can and as much as the funding that can get to classrooms. So I think a new department can really is really the next step in getting the professional recognition that these educators deserve.
Joan, thanks so much for calling this morning. We do have a fourth guest in studio this morning, Katie Wiley, who is Early Childhood Program Director at Altamira.
Good morning. Thanks. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. And we've heard already about this tension between pre-K getting a lot of attention, right? And then 0-3 sometimes being left out of the conversation. So you work with early intervention. What is that?
We do. And thank you for mentioning that. We are part of the pre-K early childhood program, but we're kind of the best kept secret in that program. Early intervention serves a more specialized community. We do serve children between the ages of birth to 3. Who are at risk for developmental delays or have been diagnosed with a disability. We get referrals from pediatricians, from private daycares, from parents directly, from CYFD frequently as well. We're an entitlement program, so every single child that is referred to us is entitled to an evaluation, regardless of how many referrals we receive. Which can be hectic sometimes, but we manage. And we do a developmental assessment, and if we find delays in that child's development, then we provide in-home services to families. We have therapists, speech therapists, OTs, occupational therapists, physical therapists that work directly with the kiddos. And our goal is to get them ready for pre-K, and especially if they need to go into the special education sector, we help parents with that transition. But ultimately, our goal is to keep them from needing special education services in the public schools.
And what could the state be doing better to better support early intervention? I mean, we just heard the caller was talking about contractors not getting reimbursed enough. I mean, that's something that your
yes,
field faces, right?
Absolutely. And we've been facing it for a long time. We have about a little bit above a 5% growth rate in early intervention every year. This last year we had a phenomenal amount of referrals, which is great because that means that our program is, word about our program is getting out there. Kids are being seen that need to be seen. But of course, reimbursement is always an issue. Right now, we haven't had a rate increase for our services, a substantial rate increase for over 20 years. So we have very, very dedicated staff who love their job, but could ultimately be paid quite a bit more if they went into the hospital setting or any other kind of private setting. But they love working with the kids. They love working with these. They love working in the homes. So they stick with us, which we are so grateful for. But recently there was a rate study done in December of 2017 that would increase our rate reimbursement from the state, and we are funded through the Department of Health. So we are one of those branches that's funded separately than the rest of you. But the rate increase is in House Bill 2 right now, which is the Department of Health's general appropriation bill. And we would hope to get that rate increase so that we could continue to build our program and we can continue to serve the kids that are referred to us without losing staff to higher paying jobs or something similar like Carmela was talking about.
I want to take one more listener call. Ellen in Albuquerque, what would you like to add?
Oh, good morning, everybody. I just wanted to mention that, well, I'm glad you guys were talking about, I'm glad you're talking about the thing with special education as far as, you know, just people with kids with disabilities. However, I toured the preschool here in Albuquerque for the NMS VBI, which is the blind school. And it was a nice place. They had a lot of different activity things, you know, for the kids. But they're also serving multiple handicapped people, kids with wheelchairs, kids with, you know, that.
Ellen, we have just a few seconds left. Do you have a question for our panelists?
What's the special education program? Where does that fall in with the regular special ed?
Diane, how does special ed fit into this new department? Just about 30 seconds left.
Special ed would probably not come into the new department. So there's a conversation about that, but it is one of the more complex. The WIC program and the special ed programs would probably continue to be administered in the way they're administered right now.
That is all the time we have for today. So much more to talk about. Thank you to our guests, Diane Denish, Katie Wiley, Carmela Salinas, Haley Hines, Representative Javier Martinez, and Representative Rebecca Dow. The conversation doesn't have to end here. You can comment on our Facebook page, tag us on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM, or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed part of today's show, you can listen on kunm.org or subscribe to our podcast via iTunes. Next time on Let's Talk New Mexico, we'll talk about solutions to homelessness. That's next Thursday morning at 8. Our engineer this morning is Marino Spencer. Celia Rainey live tweeted the show. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We'll